Chapter 157. Whom you have spoken so truly. You know how few our wants are John's and mine, and what little use we have for money, after the life we have led together for so many years. And now that he is earning an income that is ample for us, through your kindness, you are not unprepared to hear what favor I have come to ask of you? I hardly know. I was, a minute ago. Now, I think, I am not. Of my dead brother I say nothing. If the dead know what we do, but you understand me. Of my living brother I could say much, but what need I say more than that this act of duty, in which I have come to ask your indispensable assistance, is his own, and that he cannot rest until it is performed. She raised her eyes again, and the light of exultation in her face began to appear beautiful in the observant eyes that watched her. Dear sir, she went on to say, it must be done very quietly and secretly. Your experience and knowledge will point out a way of doing it. Mr. Dombey may, perhaps, be led to believe that it is something saved, unexpectedly, from the wreck of his fortunes, or that it is a voluntary tribute to his honorable and upright character, from some of those with whom he has had great dealings, or that it is some old lost debt repaid. There must be many ways of doing it. I know you will choose the best. The favor I have come to ask is, that you will do it for us in your own kind, generous, considerate manner. That you will never speak of it to John, whose chief happiness in this act of restitution is to do it secretly, unknown, and unapproved of. That only a very small part of the inheritance may be reserved to us, until Mr. Dombey shall have possessed the interest of the rest for the remainder of his life. That you will keep our secret, faithfully, but that I am sure you will, and that, from this time, it may seldom be whispered, even between you and me, but may live in my thoughts only as a new reason for thankfulness to heaven, and joy and pride in my brother. Such a look of exultation there may be on angels' faces, when the one repentant sinner enters heaven, among 99 just men. It was not dimmed or tarnished by the joyful tears that filled her eyes, but was the brighter for them. My dear Harriet, said Mr. Morphin, after a silence, I was not prepared for this. Do I understand you, that you wish to make your own part in the inheritance available for your good purpose, as well as John's? She returned, when we have shared everything together for so long a time, and have had no care, hope, or purpose apart, could I bear to be excluded from my share in this? May I not urge a claim to be my brother's partner and companion to the last? Heaven forbid that I should dispute it. He replied. We may rely on your friendly help? She said. I knew we might. I should be a worse man than I hope I am, or would willingly believe myself, if I could not give you that assurance from my heart and soul. You may, implicitly. Upon my honor, I will keep your secret. And if it should be found that Mr. Dombey is so reduced as I fear he will be, acting on a determination that there seem to be no means of influencing, I will assist you to accomplish the design on which you and John are jointly resolved. She gave him her hand, and thanked him with a cordial, happy face. Harriet, he said, detaining it in his, to speak to you of the worth of any sacrifice that you can make now, above all, of any sacrifice of mere money, would be idle and presumptuous. To put before you any appeal to reconsider your purpose, or to set narrow limits to it, would be, I feel, not less so. I have no right to mar the great end of a great history by any obtrusion of my own weak self. I have every right to bend my head before what you confide to me, satisfied that it comes from a higher and better source of inspiration than my poor worldly knowledge. I will say only this. I am your faithful steward, and I would rather be so, and your chosen friend, than I would be anybody in the world, except yourself, apostrophe, she thanked him again, cordially, and wished him good night. Are you going home? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said. Let me go with you. Apostrophe, not tonight. I am not going home now. I have a visit to make alone. Will you come tomorrow? Apostrophe, well, well, apostrophe, said he, I'll come tomorrow. In the meantime, I'll think of this, and how we can best proceed. And perhaps I'll think of it, dear Harriet, and think of me a little in connection with it. Apostrophe, he handed her down to a coach she had in waiting at the door, and if his landlady had not been deaf, she would have heard him muttering as he went back upstairs, when the coach had driven off, that we were creatures of habit, and it was a sorrowful habit to be an old bachelor. The violoncello lying on the sofa between the two chairs, he took it up, without putting away the vacant chair, and sat droning on it, and slowly shaking his head at the vacant chair, for a long, long time. The expression he communicated to the instrument at first, though monstrously pathetic and bland, was nothing to the expression he communicated to his own face, and bestowed upon the empty chair, which was so sincere that he was obliged to have recourse to Captain Cuttle's remedy more than once, and to rub his face with his sleeve. By degrees, however, the violoncello, in unison with his own frame of mind, glided melodiously into the harmonious blacksmith, which he played over and over again, until his ruddy and serene face gleamed like true metal on the anvil of a veritable blacksmith. And fine, the violoncello and the empty chair were the companions of his bachelorhood until nearly midnight, and when he took his supper, the violoncello set up on end in the sofa corner, big with the latent harmony of a whole foundry full of harmonious blacksmiths, seemed to ogle the empty chair out of its crooked eyes, with unutterable intelligence. When Harriet left the house, the driver of her hired coach, taking a course that was evidently no new one to him, went in and out by byways, through that part of the suburbs, until he arrived at some open ground, where there were a few quiet little old houses standing among gardens. At the garden gate of one of these he stopped, and Harriet alighted. Her gentle ringing at the bell was responded to by a dolorous-looking woman, of light complexion, with raised eyebrows, and head drooping on one side, who curtsied at sight of her, and conducted her across the garden to the house. How is your patient, nurse, tonight? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Harriet. In a poor way, miss, I am afraid. Oh, how she do remind me, sometimes, of my uncle's Betsy Jane. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the woman of the light complexion, in a sort of doleful rapture. In what respect? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Harriet. Miss, in all respects, apostrophe, replied the other, except that she's grown up, and Betsy Jane, when at death's door, was but a child. Apostrophe, but you have told me she recovered, apostrophe, observed Harriet mildly, so there is the more reason for hope, Mrs. Wickham. Apostrophe, ah, miss, hope is an excellent thing for such as has the spirits to bear it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Wickham, shaking her head. My own spirits is not equal to it, but I don't owe it any grudge. I envies them that is so blessed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you should try to be more cheerful, apostrophe, remarked Harriet. Thank you, miss, I'm sure, apostrophe, said Mrs. Wickham grimly. If I was so inclined, the loneliness of this situation, you'll excuse my speaking so free, would put it out of my power, in 24 hours. But I ain't at all. I'd rather not. The little spirits that I ever had, I was bereaved of at Brighton some few years ago, and I think I feel myself the better for it. Apostrophe, in truth, this was the very Mrs. Wickham who had superseded Mrs. Richards as the nurse of little Paul, and who considered herself to have gained the loss in question, under the roof of the amiable Pipchin. The excellent and thoughtful old system, hallowed by long prescription, which has usually picked out from the rest of mankind the most dreary and uncomfortable people that could possibly be laid hold of, to act as instructors of youth, finger posts to the virtues, matrons, monitors, attendants on sick beds, and the like, had established Mrs. Wickham in very good business as a nurse, and had led to her serious qualities being particularly commended by an admiring and numerous connection. Mrs. Wickham, with her eyebrows elevated, and her head on one side, lighted the way upstairs to a clean, neat chamber, opening on another chamber dimly lighted, where there was a bed. In the first room, an old woman sat mechanically staring out at the open window, on the darkness. In the second, stretched upon the bed, lay the shadow of a figure that had spurned the wind and rain, one wintry night. Hardly to be recognized now, but by the long black hair, that showed so very black against the colorless face, and all the white things about it. Oh, the strong eyes, and the weak frame. The eyes that turned so eagerly and brightly to the door when Harriet came in. The feeble head, that could not raise itself, and moved so slowly round upon its pillow. Alice. ... said the visitor's mild voice. Am I late tonight? ... You always seem late, but are always early. ... Harriet had sat down by the bedside now, and put her hand upon the thin hand lying there. You are better? ... Mrs. Wickham, standing at the foot of the bed, like a disconsolate specter, most decidedly and forcibly shook her head to negative this position. It matters very little. ... said Alice, with a faint smile. Better or worse today, is but a day's difference perhaps not so much. ... Mrs. Wickham, as a serious character, expressed her approval with a groan, and having made some cold dabs at the bottom of the bedclothes, as feeling for the patient's feet and expecting to find them stony, went clinking among the medicine bottles on the table, as who should say, while we are here, let us repeat the mixture as before. ... said Alice, whispering to her visitor, evil courses, and remorse, travel, want, and weather, storm within, and storm without, have worn my life away. It will not last much longer. She drew the hand up as she spoke, and laid her face against it. I lie here, sometimes, thinking I should like to live until I had had a little time, to show you how grateful I could be. It is a weakness, and soon passes. Better for you as it is. Better for me. ... How different her hold upon the hand, from what it had been when she took it by the fireside on the bleak winter evening. Scorn, rage, defiance, recklessness, look here. This is the end. Mrs. Wickham, having clinked sufficiently among the bottles, now produced the mixture. Mrs. Wickham looked hard at her patient in the act of drinking, screwed her mouth up tight, her eyebrows also, and shook her head, expressing that torture shouldn't make her say it was a hopeless case. Mrs. Wickham then sprinkled a little cooling stuff about the room, with the air of a female grave digger, who was strewing ashes on ashes, dust on dust, for she was a serious character, and withdrew to partake of certain funeral baked meats downstairs. How long is it, asked Alice, since I went to you, and told you what I had done, and when you were advised it was too late for anyone to follow? ... It is a year and more, said Harriet. A year and more, said Alice, thoughtfully intent upon her face. Months upon months since you brought me here. Harriet answered yes. ... Brought me here, by force of gentleness and kindness. Me. ... said Alice, shrinking with her face behind her hand, and made me human by woman's looks and words, and angel's deeds. ... Harriet bending over her, composed and soothed her. By and by, Alice lying as before, with the hand against her face, asked to have her mother called. Harriet called to her more than once, but the old woman was so absorbed looking out at the open window on the darkness, that she did not hear. It was not until Harriet went to her and touched her, that she rose up, and came. Mother, said Alice, taking the hand again, and fixing her lustrous eyes lovingly upon her visitor, while she merely addressed a motion of her finger to the old woman, tell her what you know. apostrophe, tonight, my dearie? Apostrophe, apostrophe, A, mother, apostrophe, answered Alice, faintly and solemnly, tonight. Apostrophe, the old woman, whose wits appeared disorderly by alarm, remorse, or grief, came creeping along the side of the bed, opposite to that on which Harriet sat, and kneeling down, so as to bring her withered face upon a level with the coverlet, and stretching out her hand, so as to touch her daughter's arm, began. My handsome gal, apostrophe, heaven, what a cry was that, with which she stopped there, gazing at the poor form lying on the bed. Changed, long ago, mother. Withered, long ago, apostrophe, said Alice, without looking at her. Don't grieve for that now. My daughter, apostrophe, faltered the old woman, my gal who'll soon get better, and shame 'em all with her good looks. Apostrophe, Alice smiled mournfully at Harriet, and fondled her hand a little closer, but said nothing. Who'll soon get better, I say, apostrophe, repeated the old woman, menacing the vacant air with her shriveled fist, and who'll shame 'em all with her good looks, she will. I say she will. She shall. Apostrophe, as if she were in passionate contention with some unseen opponent at the bedside, who contradicted her, my daughter has been turned away from, and cast out, but she could boast relationship to proud folks too, if she chose. Ah! To proud folks! There's relationship without your clergy and your wedding rings, they may make it, but they can't break it, and my daughter's well related. Show me Mrs. Dombey, and I'll show you my Alice's first cousin. Apostrophe, Harriet glanced from the old woman to the lustrous eyes intent upon her face, and derived corroboration from them. What? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the old woman, her nodding head bridling with a ghastly vanity. Though I am old and ugly now, much older by life and habit than years though, I was once as young as any. Ah! As pretty too, as many. I was a fresh country wench in my time, darling, apostrophe, stretching out her arm to Harriet, across the bed, and looked at two. Down in my country, Mrs. Dombey's father and his brother were the gayest gentlemen, and the best liked that came a visiting from London. They have long been dead, though. Lord, Lord, this long while. The brother, who was my ally's father, longest of the two. Apostrophe, she raised her head a little, and peered at her daughter's face, as Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.